Collectors, let's talk about the real villain in your collection. It's not Dr. Doom, it's the dreaded box stack. You know the one, piles of sagging boxes, and the issue you need is always in the bottom box. When you lift, you pray your spine survives. If your comic boxes are stacked like a game of Jenga, it's time for Drawer Boxes, the easy access storage solution from CollectionDrawer.com. Drawer Boxes are stackable up to 6 high, but you don't have to unstack anything to get inside. Just slide out the drawer and you're opening a treasure chest of comic glory. And just like any file cabinet drawer, they'll hang open on the own while you peruse your collection, thanks to their patented box locks box anchors that secure each unit so that they won't tip. Worried about a drawer slipping out and dumping that near mint run of Ultimate Spider-Man on the floor? Not a chance, but their patented locking tabs that keep drawers securely locked into their shell until you're ready to remove them. Let's talk box sort upright dividers. They keep your comics standing tall, sorted by title, issue, era, whatever you like, and make it easy to file. No more leaning stacks causing spine cracks. So ditch the lifting, ditch the chaos. Drawer boxes turn your collection into a library, not a workout. Visit CollectionDrawer.com and start enjoying your collection today. Doesn't your first Deadpool appearance deserve better than being buried in a cardboard coffin?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have out this week. We sure do.
We should this week, for sure.
Yeah,
yes, let's do it this week. It's a little bit of a shorter stack than usual, but that's all right, because we are going to kick it off with one of the biggest books, and I don't think this is exaggerating, but one of the biggest books of the past couple of decades. It is Marvel DC Deadpool Batman, number one. This is the first time the two publishers have crossed over in, I think, 30 years, something like that.
Yeah, it's since the Amalgam, right?
Since the Amalgam universe. It's actually, I believe, going to be the 30th anniversary of that next year, and they're teasing that something more is to come. This is actually the first of two one-shots that they're putting out. The second one is appropriately Batman Deadpool, and that's going to come from DC Comics. This one comes from Marvel Comics. But we got an array of creators working on it. It is written by Zeb Wells, Chip Zdarsky, Kelly Thompson, Kevin Smith, Al Ewing, Frank Miller, Ryan North. Art by Greg Capullo, Terry Donson, Gary Hyrou, Adam Kubert, Dyke Ruin, and Frank Miller, and Ryan Stegman.
Wow.
We got a bunch of stories in here. The lead story, of course, is Deadpool Batman. That's by Wells and Capullo. But then we've got a bunch of backups as well. We got Wonder Woman and Captain America. We've got the real highlight here, which is Jeff Landshark and Crypto the Superdog.
Yes.
We've also got Kevin Smith returning to two characters that he knows very well, which is Green Arrow and Daredevil. And Frank, Al Ewing does the Guardians of the Galaxy Green Lantern crossover, right, which is specifically like a Rocket Raccoon Hal Jordan crossover. Frank Miller crosses over Old Man Logan and Dark Knight Returns Batman. And then we get a brand new amalgam character in the
Justin.
Back, Logo.
Who Space is Wolverine.
Justin, yes. They heard your bits and they turned them into a story. How do you feel, Justin?
I feel great. It's great when a joke can be so right that it comes true, you know? And the joke is on you, Pete, really.
Let's talk about whether this joke was right over the course of the entire book. Obviously, a lot of different stories to talk about, but there's a lot of hype here and a lot of expectations. Overall, how did you feel about this as a crossover book before we get into the individual stories? How do you think this worked?
Well, I feel like the first two stories were a perfect comparison for me, because I feel like you get the first one, which is, you know, not to say one was bad and another was good, but like the first one was like, hey, look at what if these two guys bumped into each other and they both do a little bit of what they're used to doing and sort of like the end. So like that's fine, but it didn't feel special. The second one, the Wonder Woman Captain America story, I thought was excellent. and was such a great emotional and actually connective. It showed what these characters have in common. It implied a potential romance, I feel like. And, like, it just was, like, I loved that one. I feel like those were the – there was such a much more of an emotional quotient to the second one as opposed to the first.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for your overall thoughts about the book and not specifically talking about any of the stories. But what about you, Pete?
Well, I said the first two, Pete.
He was very specific about his thoughts on the first two stories, yeah.
Well, I thought we were going to really digest this one, make a meal of it, Alex. So why don't we just take our time and
like as a crossover, as an event, like just looking at this thing, I think here's my general take. I think there was a distinct lack of ambition in this book. That's all.
Well, that's what I'm saying about the first one. And the second one, I thought, had ambition and was reaching. That's why I feel like there was almost like a 50-50 hit rate, I feel like, for me with these. And I think the first two were just the biggest ones. No, I like fighting. You guys get to fight so much, and I never do. Because I'm just a little wallflower in the corner.
Are you jealous of when we fight?
No, because it's actually sort of scary at times, but it is nice that you guys can do it and still, like, I guess, be internet friends.
I guess internet.
Yeah, I don't know. I just live in this little box up here.
Well, not to agree with Zalbs, because that's a horrible thing to say out loud, but I do think that, like, this doesn't seem like a big event because of the first story, where it's kind of like, oh, shit. Imagine if Deadpool and Batman were in the same world. Well, as it turns out, Joker is also kind of crazy, who is similar to Deadpool, who is also a little crazy. So they kind of cancel each other out. And Batman just would be like, another day. You know, so I felt like, why is this the first thing we're seeing? Because it just seems like Batman already has a Deadpool and his name is Joker and they go pretty well together. And this doesn't seem to fit in any way. Although I was won over by the Crypto and Jeff story. Oh my God. Yes. Is that just absolutely glorious? And then the Green Arrow Deadpool team up was Frank Miller Daredevil. Doing.
The Green Arrow Daredevil. That was, as soon as I read the first couple pages before we got to the name page, the creative page, I was like, oh, this is Kevin Smith right here. Yeah. And so, like, I feel like that did a good job. And I like the idea that it was his two characters that were able to come together. That's a cool idea. The story was cool. It was very Kevin Smith, if nothing else. And I enjoyed the art in it.
And then we get the Batman kind of Wolverine Frank Miller take, which the nostalgia factor of seeing that kind of Batman again was fun. So I was like, okay, cool. Even though I was like, this is short, but it's kind of like a nice kind of quick nostalgia bath. So I was like, okay, fine, no problem. But the logo, I was like, oh man, this is Justin just pissing on my grave here. You know, this is just awful. But
and thank you for telling me where your grave is going to be. Because honestly, pre-pissing on your grave is more satisfying because you'll be buried in the piss.
Yeah, yeah. You're really
I want to take the opposite, start from the opposite end of the collection from Justin. And I do think actually logo is a great example of where this went wrong is probably too strong because I think this is fine. But the idea of, like, what if we mash together Lobo, who, Justin, you do like to joke, is Space Wolverine, and Wolverine is like, what if we made a peanut butter and peanut butter sandwich? And there's no variation there. Like, the actual Amalgam Universe thing was Darkclaw, which is what if we took Batman and Wolverine and jabbed them together? And that's, like, weird and interesting. Or there was Spider-Boy, which was Superboy and Spider-Man. Again, weird and interesting. Like, trying to take these flavors that shouldn't work together and figure out how we can make them work going forward, whether they were successful or not, TBD. But that, to me, sort of points to a lot of this collection is, like, this is pleasant enough, but this isn't the sort of thing of, like, 30 years in the making, here you go. Yeah. And my feeling, they haven't announced this yet, but my feeling is this is like them kind of feeling each other out a little bit. I do think we're probably going to get like a Spider-Man Superman series of two one-shots that are going to be announced for January or February. And then given it is the 30th anniversary, I think we're going to see a full-on Amalgam Universe 2 event sometime next year. And that's what they're building up to. So this is like the little aperitif that we're getting. But that's what it feels like, is an aperitif. And I want more out of it.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, these are short pieces. Like, you were comparing it a little unfairly, I think, to the Amalgam Universe, which those were full four-issue series, I believe, right? Or longer, maybe, even. So, like, they had a lot of run-up and time to, like, build out a real story. These are, like, super short. And I do think the other problem, the difficulty with Deadpool Batman is these characters are already wildly overexposed, and so we're super familiar with their moves. So unless they make a big swing and find a bigger way to connect them, just felt like they just took an easier path, I think, and it for a harder thing to do.
Yeah, I'm.
But again, that's why I think Wonder Woman and Cap are so successful.
Well, I want to get to that in a second, but I do think that, like, yes, this is the start of something, so hopefully we'll get more. But I do think the Crypto Jeff team up was perfect and just so well drawn and such a fun meeting that I was like, oh, great. They're complimenting each other and bringing it to another level, which I think is fantastic.
I would argue that was so successful because it's like a short, fun thing, which is what we always get from Jeff and right. often Crypto. This stack aside, we're going to talk about in a little bit, that like we're used to this. And so they fit the story to the format and the characters to the right format there. And so it
That's Kelly Thompson and Guri Haru know how to work with each other, and they really nailed that. I do want to say that, like, in terms of a silly one-off, the Green Lantern Rocket story didn't really have an ending to it, but at least it was kind of goofy. And
yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. And it was fun. That's okay for me for a backup. But like we're saying with the lead story, It just didn't work. Like, the jokes almost across the board fell flat. There was a lot of weird things going on there, like scenes like Deadpool goes on the roof and Commissioner Gordon is like, hey, you really got to get off the roof. Like, that was the energy of what he was bringing there, versus there was no sense of, not to rewrite this or anything, but like, why would Commissioner Gordon be like, there's a new costumed maniac in Gotham with two swords, and be like, hey, can you get out of here before Batman leaves? Like, what world would he have that reaction?
Well, I think for all the characters, the stakes were very low. The stakes were very low in that first story, and that's why I think it felt like pretty like warm oatmeal. And I think some of the other stories had either a lighter tone where not enough happening, or the Wonder Woman. Have I said I like that story?
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about
that story. Had higher stakes.
No, what I hated about that story,
Alex, I feel like you didn't like it, so I want to hear what you.
Well, I'm actually curious to let Pete go on his rant that he's bursting first, because I'm really curious to see if we agree.
Because this felt to me like Batman versus Superman was like, what's your mom's name? Oh my God. Where she was like, Steve? And he was like, yeah, that's my name. Oh my God, I love Steve's. I was like, what is happening right now? The fuck is happening? Just because this dude's name is Steve, you're in love with him? Like,
that's not exactly.
Okay, I just want to say for the record, that was 100% not what my problem with the story was.
Yeah.
And did not occur to me at literally any point.
Okay, well. Congrats, yep, I guess.
That was your only problem with the story, Pete?
Yeah, nothing I didn't else? Like it. I just what felt are you like saying? It.
Pete's famous for having one problem with everything.
All right, fair enough.
That's
I'm
his whole thing.
I'm surprised that his problem wasn't my problem, which, if you're not aware, the story, which leaked online early and people were upset about it, and I think, frankly, rightly so, is it finds Steve and Diana, who were both fighting in World War II, at the closing days of World War II, in the bunker with Hitler, and Steve has a gun to his head, and Wonder Woman is like, whoa, 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 don't kill Hitler. Let's take him to justice. And now, Pete, you complained about this a lot, and I was curious to get your take on this. Like, you always hate this
kill
particular
Hitler.
Like ethical problem. Like, what do you think about the ethical problem of, like, if you could travel back in time and kill adult baby Hitler, would you do that? Like, is that a thing that you would want to do, or do you feel like
adult baby Hitler?
Yeah, adult baby Hitler. Like, after he's already done all the atrocities, like, after he's already
like
killed
8 years old, how old is
no,
baby Hitler?
No, I'm talking
Hitler.
About the age that he is in this story, which is mere seconds before he kills himself.
which we get to see
in reality.
In reality, in our world. In our world. Like, he's about to die anyway. Like, do you kill him or, like, do you let him live? You know, like, that's an interesting ethical quandary, I think, that they really explore in this story.
Yeah, I mean, it is something we see in comics a lot, this kind of, do you go back in time to kill the baby version? We've dealt with it a lot with Apocalypse and, you know, like, what if you raise the Apocalypse baby? Right,
so what
baby?
I'm asking is, like, instead of a baby, like an innocent baby who has their whole life ahead of them and then you have to kill a baby, it's a full-grown adult regular old Hitler who has already done the stuff, is already evil. Would you kill him, Pete?
Yes, I would.
Yeah. And so would Steve Rogers. Like, this
I'll give it to you. That was a weird choice. That was a weird choice.
Here's what I was thinking about. Again, not to keep rewriting these, but I was yelling at my wife about it, who was like, that's very nice.
Oh, your poor wife.
She's very unhappy.
Yeah. Jesus.
Change it to Red Skull. Like, if it was Red Skull, I would have been able to accept the premise of the story so much more, because we know Red Skull is like, I'll come back someday, versus Hitler, who also, I should mention in the story, dies because Steve Rogers, after being convinced by Diana, literally in a comical way, tosses his gun over his shoulder in the direction of Hitler, who then proceeds to grab it and kill himself. Like, that whole thing. Like, I loved Terry Dodson art, Rachel Dodson art.
Great.
Getting to see this fun mashup of what if Wonder Woman was in Marvel events? What if Captain America was in DC events? Cool. I'm cool with all that. That's fun. But, like, this essential scene that we kept flashing back to, particularly right now in America, in the place that we are in, I don't think I need to see a story about two superheroes who very famously, including in this story, have killed people, being like, no, but Hitler, we can't kill him.
I mean, while I was reading, I was like, oh, this could have been. I also think it edges toward, like, it's just too much happening, like you're saying. Like, it's like, this could have been just them meeting on any battlefield in the World War II. Like, we didn't need this.
100%. It's the framing device that's the problem, because, like, I understand the impulse there, and I understand this is the line that superheroes don't draw. They do not kill. But, like, Captain America very famously punching Hitler in the face on the first appearance in his first comic.
But so, also Wonder Woman famously kills, you know, villains and stuff like that. Like, she doesn't have a rogues gallery as much as others.
Absolutely. Like, if this was, I don't know how this would work, but if this was the Deadpool Batman story, those are two characters who would have a moral conflict over killing Hitler. Because Deadpool would be like, yeah, man, let's chop off his head. And Batman would be like, no, no matter what, we don't kill. Wonder Woman and Steve Rogers are like, well, kill sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah. Also, it could be fun where Deadpool is like, oh, man, I hate this stash. I want to kill this guy. You know what I mean? And then,
well, he hates the stash. Interesting. That's your big problem with Hitler, too, right, Pete?
No, I'm it would be a ridiculous.
Yeah, generally
reason.
Speaking, people's biggest problem with Hitler is his mustache.
Yeah.
Like, too small. Same.
That's the joke. Yeah.
Too small. Why shave it there? People ask. I mean, I would say, though, like, modern Steve Rogers does not kill and would not. So, like, I feel like that's the characters they were dealing with here.
Yes, absolutely. There were also, without getting too much into it, I think certain real-world events this felt eerily familiar to, which obviously was nothing on the part of the comic book team here, but
it just seems like we waited 30 years for a crossover, and then they're like, you know what this needs? Some Hitler. You know, it's like, what are we doing? You know, like,
a lot of people wrote in about that. Well, there's, like Alex is saying, there's probably going to be lots more of this.
Yes, okay. There's going to be lots more of this. And in fact, in November, we're going to be getting DC's version. And I will say, despite everything that I've said about it, Grant Morrison is writing the lead story. It sounds absolutely bonkers and more in line with, like,
Grant Morrison and bonkers? You don't say.
Well, it sounds like, just on the surface, that they're taking the craziest, biggest swing possible with that story. So we'll see what happens. We'll check. Fun. We'll see you in 2 months. Until then, Wonder Woman, again, number 25 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Daniel Samperi. And Pete, I'm very curious to hear from you if mice have ears. Because Mouse Man knows.
Mouse Man
knows. Mice have ears.
Stop.
Mouse Man.
Stop. Stop.
I knew it. I knew I'd drive him crazy. This is a big issue.
Stop
giving
it.
Us some flash forwards to the future of the DC universe.
God,
the Justice League is killed by a new villain called the Matriarch, who is coming directly out of this issue. As meanwhile, in the present, Diana tracks down Etta Candy and the new baby who was born to the Amazon, who was pregnant with an Amazon back in issue one of Wonder Woman and kicked all this whole action. Meanwhile, Mouse Man is the fascist leader of the state that she is fighting against. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, first off, cool cover. Yeah, this is intense, but you know, I'm still very much enjoying the storyline. The repetitive dialogue that I don't want to repeat is getting very annoying, but I love the action. I love the art. This is stressing me out a little bit. I need Wonder Woman to kind of turn the corner, but man, continues to be absolutely fantastic.
What's stressing you out? All your favorite heroes being slaughtered over the course of this issue?
Yeah, that and the whole repetitive evil kind of thing that's happening.
Well, I think there's a point behind it. I don't think Tom King just didn't have any more words to say. You must have really cheered when Green Arrow got killed, right?
Yeah, that was pretty sweet. Thanks for reminding me.
Still mad, yeah. Tried to give you the choice. I really enjoyed this. I feel like Tom King is writing some satire, some political satire, and he's doing a great job of like keeping it very much in the story without having to do what a lot of, like, I think politics when it comes into comics is being very direct with the satire. He's like taking it much more metaphorically, and I think that really works here. It's making its point about how fascists behave, how authoritarians behave, and how like controlling speech is a big part of that. Something that I think we are contending with in our current world, and that's it's heightened in here and brought into the comic book world in a great, great way. I think Tom King's going way out of his way to establish the matriarch here in perhaps the most extreme way possible. And then very specifically being like, this is Wonder Woman's villain. We talked about how there isn't that rogues gallery for Wonder Woman, and it seems like Tom King's trying to make a big move there.
Yeah, I thought this was great as well. Totally agree with everything that you are saying, Justin. And I just want to add that in the between all of this, there's also some great Wonder Woman action scenes in here as she fights against Mouse Man and his giant mice, which sounds ridiculous, but Daniel Semperi just draws the hell out of every single page.
Mouse fight is insane.
It's great. Mm. The whole thing's great. Great book.
Big mouse.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Casey Jones, number one from IDW, written by Alex Pakdendahl, art by Amon K. Nahulpin. This is spinning off of the new run of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which finds Casey Jones recovering from getting shot in the gut, and now he is back in the hockey mask. He's got his sports equipment, and he's not coming here to play, Pete.
That's right. He's not. First off, I don't.
It's ironic because he's only coming with items that you play with.
Well, let's not tear this down. Let me have some enjoyment before you two assholes start.
I'm just saying
poking holes in all of this shit. All right.
Alex said he didn't come to play, but I think he came to play.
And when you say holes, do you mean like holes in his hockey mask, right?
Yeah, so he can breathe.
Or do you mean holes in one from his great golf club that he tries to kill with?
This is fun. You guys know sports. So before you guys ruin it, I am very excited because we're joining this issue as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are finally kind of coming together as a team again. So when kind of Casey Jones joins the fold here, we're full on team action, and the nostalgia bath is glorious. I was so happy to have this comic, and also so happy to have all four of the turtles kind of getting along in this issue. This has been super stressful, what's been going on in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles thing. They've been dealing with so much, so this was a nice breather, even though Casey Jones is lying to April O'Neil, which I really don't appreciate. It makes me so mad. We still got a long way to go with Donatello and everything, but this was just such a blast for me to read again and to see again all four of the turtles working against a street fighting gang and trying to save New York City. This is just classic, great times. We had to go through a lot to get here, but I'm so excited that we are here, and can't wait to read what's next. This is a blast. Love the art. Love the action. Thank you.
I'm going to ask a question to you, Pete. It's going to sound maybe obnoxious, but I mean it genuinely.
I don't believe
what
you.
What do you like? I truly mean it genuinely. What do you like about Casey Jones?
Okay, first off,
and I guess where did you start? Because is he from the? Where was he first appeared in the animated show in the original comic?
Yeah, well, he was in the original comic, but he was also became more prevalent in the animated show.
Can I specify?
Show.
A lot of people think he was in the first Friday the 13th, but that was his mom was the villain in that one. He didn't show up.
Nobody
until
thought
the second
that
movie.
Alex.
He was in the second Friday. The
no,
13th.
Alex.
No, Alex. Originally, it was like, I'm going to send you down to Casey Jones's locker.
And no,
he's a pirate.
No, he started in the Eastman and Laird comics, and he was like a Raph type character where he was kind of off on his own, battling his own battles. And him and Raphael became friends. And then Raph was like, hey, you know, let me introduce you to my family. And it was a whole thing. But then eventually, through trial and error, they all became friends and work together. So, glorious. And also, you know, gave April O'Neil somebody to love. So that was also important.
Did they get together?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really great. I thought it was interesting.
They're
that
together
April goes
in
out.
This issue.
They go out on patrol. Oh, I thought she was just crashing there.
Well, she might have been crashing there, but they are together.
I thought it was interesting. She goes on patrol as him.
I'm going to throw sometimes. Out a comment that I think Pete is going to hate because I generally like this book, and I think Alex Pachtadal does a good job with the characterization. I think the idea of a Casey Jones who is down and out and trying to fight through his wounds is interesting. I wish the turtles weren't in this. And the reason wish the turtles weren't in this is because we have a lot of them in their own book, and I want to see this stand on its own. Like, why is this a solo book for Casey Jones? I don't need a guest appearance by them, and they spend so much time in this book that it just feels like another issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Casey Jones, asshole. It's not just a Casey Jones book.
That's how he's announced on the streets of Mutant Town as well, I believe. The thing for me is, like, I didn't mind seeing them, but they felt just so divorced from the turtles in the other comic that I really like. The turtles that are, like, dealing with a lot and trying to, like, get themselves back together. These guys were like, hey, could I eat this last slice of pizza, dude? And I was like, oh.
Yeah, they've gone. They're on the other side of it. This is a little fast forwarded in time.
Well, but I like the drama that's happening in the main book much more, where they aren't quite getting.
But this
along.
Gives you
they're
a little hope
through.
That they're going to make it. You know what I mean?
No, but I feel like this book completely ignores that because it's, you know, it feels like a slightly different continuity choice, and keeping the turtles in the place that you like, where they're just like floating along, feels, I guess, good because it's focused on Casey Jones. But I miss the other turtles from the other book in this, and I don't know why he would ever have a golf club.
Oh my god, golf club is a great weapon. How dare you, man?
famously. Exquisite Corpses, number 5 from Image Comics,
we're
written
done.
By.
We'll move on.
Do you have other
How many
things
times
to say?
Do you want to review it, Pete? You said the word glorious 9 times.
Well, I just want to talk about how much fun I was having with that book.
You already did. Said that. You said that.
You truly said glorious more than like a Sunday school teacher.
Right.
Wow.
If you would like me to go back and show the cover and you actually describe the cover, we could do that. But that's the only reason we're going back. Otherwise, we're going forward.
I didn't actually want to go back.
Alex was being dead energy fun. Right
Pete,
now.
Get your snacks and get back in the car. We got to get back on the road, okay? Exquisite Corpses, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Jordy Belair with James Tynion IV, art by Claire Rowe with Michael Walsh. This takes place in a small town that has a bunch of insane serial killers let go in it, or professional killers, assassins, excuse me, but some of them are kind of serial killers. And it's all for a big game for the control of America and possibly the world. In this issue, we're focusing on two characters, one a pyromaniac, the other a bomb expert, I want to say, who strike it up a bit of a flirtation.
Oh, yeah, a little romance, maybe.
Doesn't go well, guys.
No, it does not go well. What do you guys think about this issue?
Well, I like this comic a lot. The backstage stuff is interesting. It's a little hard to keep all the characters straight because there's a lot of characters in here. And in the back of the book, we have our round robin style brackets.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel like I haven't seen
brackets,
any
dude.
Of these characters.
Well,
in
I haven't
so
seen
long.
Any of those. And also, like, I don't think they said their names at any point in this book. So at the end, I was like, who do we lose? Which one is
I save. Which I was bracket? Like, because then I was like, I feel like these guys are all crossed off last time. I was like, is this a random person? But I do like it feels like the townspeople are fighting back. There is definitely progress made in this story. It just feels like this is such a big world that it's hard in one. I want these issues to be like double sized or something to like push the story, because the story's so big that I feel like we need more pages than a standard comic.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this is fucked up comic, but it's also very enjoyable in a very dark kind of way. The almost couple that we have in this is kind of fun, but it's nice to see that, like, even if you're like a serial killer murderer, if your, you know, quote unquote partner says, like, don't touch me, you better listen, bro. You know what I mean? The stakes are higher in this world. If you don't fucking listen, your ass is grass. So that was kind of a fun moment.
Well, but like, think about a rom-com, Pete. Like, it felt like the vibe was right. And then she just was going to kill me. You know, like, they had the moment. They were kissing. Yeah. Shared kiss, it felt like.
I really liked Claire Rowe's art says, in here. I just want to say, per the romance, I think she did a really good job of rolling that out. There's really good tension in terms of the romance. You know the other shoe is going to drop at some point, but it plays out really nicely through the art. Marvel Zombies Red Band, number 1 from Marvel, written by Ethan S. Parker and Griffin Sheridan, art by Jan Basildua. And if you want to know more about this, we had Ethan on the show just last week, I want to say.
It's too bad we didn't. That's correct. Too bad we didn't talk about this issue, you know?
And we talked about this very issue. So this is not what I expected, or at least not exactly what I expected. It starts with the Fantastic Four returning from space after getting their powers from cosmic rays, except it actually gave them powers and turned them into Marvel zombies. The part that I didn't expect is that there are a bunch of other Marvel characters from the time period that already have their powers and are raring to go against the zombie infection. It's a new take. It's unconnected to the previous takes of Marvel Zombies. What did you guys think about this?
I really like this. I like the fresh take. I like really pinning it to a major Marvel event, the beginning of the Marvel Age, as the zombie infection point. I like that we came in on a very particular point in Spider-Man's origin and got to see that play out in a different way. I like it, there's real tension here in that I'm like, oh no, we're going to lose all the, you expect in a zombie movie, Marvel Zombies is like, oh, all the heroes are dead.
Yeah.
And they become zombies. This, they do a good job of being like, not all of them, some of them. We get a pretty nasty death for one character here that I thought was really cool and well done. I'm like, did anyone bite Hulk? Doesn't seem like it yet. Let's see. It's good in that way. And then we get a sort of a larger mystery, it looks like, in the very last page that I also didn't see coming. So I thought this was great, surprising, but still with the classic flair and the smart choice to have the Marvel Zombies be like just asshole versions of themselves who are like snarky and like, I'll eat your face, idiot. And that you don't see that type of zombie anywhere else. And I think that really works.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of felt like a fun what if, like what if the Fantastic Four came back as zombies? Art style is amazing. The Frightful Four is a fun kind of moment they have as a team. So, yeah, I feel like, you know, this is a nice execution of a fun idea. Spider-Man kind of crying in the corner was really sad, and that whole fucking just seeing their hands like that was fucking brutal. And I was just like, oh man, this is tough. If it's like, we're gonna go through all the Marvel universe and just fucking make you cry, bro. It's like, I don't know if I signed up for that, but okay. But yeah, amazing art, interesting storytelling.
Yeah, a couple of things that I wanted to call out. One, my particular focus is always on whether the red band is appropriate. And here, I think it kind of is. Like, it's definitely at least a mature reader's book because there is some pretty gross things that happen in here in exactly the way that you want.
A lot of meat.
Yeah, for sure. And I also really like the old school throwback captions that are happening throughout. They're very purposefully Stan Lee style, like, face it, true believers, here comes your next big sensation. And then it's like Sue Storm biting off somebody's head. So the juxtaposition of that is very fun throughout the book as well.
I had one question. What do you think is behind, what's the science behind all the heroes being total dicks once they're zombies?
They're hungry, man. It's
The brains.
You got to give them a Snickers.
Yeah, hangry. That's what it is.
Snickers. Just pure hanger. Do you feel like once, because I'm thinking about it, it's like, once you eat a person, you're sort of like, well, I might as well just be a dick. I've given up on all morals.
Yeah, it could be
once
that.
Once you eat a person, yeah, it really opens
Should
you
we
up.
Find out?
No.
Yes. Oh, I want to see. You could be better, or you could be worse. And Alex was just joking for sure. He doesn't have an ongoing cannibalistic thread that we can pull clips from previous shows, compile them, and play that reel right now.
We don't have the post.
We're
going
to pull. Yeah, we have to do that. We're going
to
pull.
Yeah, we have to put it together. We got to edit it together.
He does talk about eating people a lot, Alex. I will say.
Yeah, just like floating the possibility as a joke, but like a lot. As a joke, though. Anyway, why don't we talk about Absolute Flash number 7 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Travis Moore. In this issue, Wally West and Baby Grodd are on the run from the Rogues, or are they? We're starting to get towards a team-up in this issue as they fight the Absolute version of the Weather Wizard. Justin, curious to go over to you because you've really turned the page on this book, I would say.
How dare you. Boo. Boo.
I've come around and I just want to say nice cover, no notes to add. And this is
a great cover.
Yeah. No, I do really enjoy this. I feel like it started very right over the plate, I felt like. But ever since then, it's really moved into finding all these interesting little nooks and crannies and using the Speed Force in a slightly different way, the use of the Rogues here, and maybe the Flash is going to join the Rogues. I like how Flash is using – he's not like – I feel like in so many Flash books, he's like, I'll just run fast to solve that. Right. And this one, there's a little more like talking going on. And I actually think it works for the Flash because it saves the speed for when it's needed.
I agree with Justin there. I feel like the best thing about this is it doesn't feel like a Flash book, which is great. I'm very suspicious of this Grodd monkey that disappeared right when he was getting arrested. I mean, come on. And then having kind of like Flash fight Moses is a weird choice, but they're taking some big swings, which is cool. So, yeah, I've been impressed with this book.
Yeah. I saw somebody comment, and I thought this was so apt, that even lower-tier books like Absolute Flash and Absolute Green Lantern are still really good, that there has not been a single miss from this line yet, and I think that's absolutely true and continues in this issue. Good art. I really like Travis Moore on this. This is different than, I think it started with Nick Robles, maybe. Maybe I'm wrong. Whatever it is, different art there, but I think it fits really nicely and gives it a nice look. And like you said, like, I think the way that they're playing out the Flash and playing with the idea of the Flash might go bad or might be good is very interesting. I do like Grodd. Let it go, Pete. He's a cute little monkey. It's okay.
He's so cute.
Don't trust him.
Big brain. Big brain. Yeah.
Big Don't brain. Trust him. And I'm very intrigued because this seems like it's actually probably a cornerstone book for the mythology of the universe. We're getting a lot through, I think it's Evelyn Thawne instead of Eobard Thawne, who has some sort of creature that looks like it might be a Martian in a tank, who she calls her predecessor. So lots of interesting mysteries going on here. I'm enjoying this.
The old Martian in a tank idea.
Good is Dead, number one from Image Comics, written by David Lapham and Maria Lapham, art by David Lapham. This takes place in a small town that's always had one bridge, and now they're going to have a second bridge.
Oh,
there's some other things. I know.
What?
Pretty big.
What?
There's some other things going on here as we focus on the sheriff in town, who is just thankful that the main criminal in town will not be able to control that one bridge anymore. But at the same time, it seems like some sort of plague has been let loose in the town, and there's a lot of other things that are going on. What'd you guys think about this kickoff issue?
Well, I'm wondering if this is like a husband and wife duo or a brother sister, you know what I mean? But
what exactly would that matter?
I don't know, but it'd be pretty cool either way. That's always fun when family kind of
maybe
works
both
together on projects.
Maybe both, right, Pete?
Could well,
why
I
not
hope
both?
Not. Well, there's a couple reasons why not both. but yeah, this is fucked up and dark and twisted. You know, I mean, when the, you know, spoilers for what's happening here, but when the dude lights himself on fire, I was like, okay, you have my attention. Way to grab the reader. I get it. But yeah, great art, a very interesting story. I'm excited to see what happens.
This comic, I feel like, has prestige TV show, like, all over it.
If
this feels like halfway between the weirdness and wildness of True Detective Season 1 and the township logistics of True Detective Season 2.
Wow.
And I mean that in actually, like, a good way. Like, it's a,
it
worked for me. I was sort of like, for the first half, I was like, I don't know what this is amounting to. And then it really started to, like, the scene started to stack up in a way where I was like, okay, I like this weird world. I like this cop that's like, hey, I got to solve this case in a week. And everyone's like, sure. And inside he's like, because I'm going to die then. I will die right when I solve this. So that's just a good setup, sort of a noir-y style setup. So I like this first issue.
The Incredible Hulk, number 29 from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Adam Gorham. We're really building to something here as Hulk is taken in by a cadre of monsters, including Eldest and the Mother of Monsters, who wants to suck his gamma and become a monster themselves, leading to a big reveal at the end of the issue. I really like where this title is going. It is gross and horror-driven. It's really building off the mythology that was set up in Immortal Hulk in an interesting and weird way. I'm digging it. What about you guys?
Yeah.
Same. I really like this. I like the way the Hulk gets just wrecked in this issue. Mm-hmm. You never really see him looking messed up like that. I like the reveal of our villain that's going to be the fight next issue. And I stand by my claim when we talked about this last issue. If you're a fan of Hellboy, like classic Hellboy, Hellboy-focused stories, I think this is the book for you. This feels like it has that, like, Hulk is like, what do I have to do? Who am I fighting? This is going poorly energy to it that I think you may be missing from the current Hellboy storylines and that are featuring often other characters.
Yeah, first off, intense cover, does a great job of setting a great tone for the story. This is over-the-top fun, and I love it. I love the fun devil abomination reveal that we get, great fight stuff. This is just, I love the gore, the creepy evil spider and the eggs and all that kind of nightmare shit that goes on. Holy crap, Philip Kennedy Johnson is killing this. Seems like he's having a blast, and him and Adam, the artist, are just really coming up with some impressive Hulk nightmare scenarios. So this is great.
Justice League Red, number two from DC Comics, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Clayton Henry. This is following a not exactly Black Ops team, but off the books team version of the Justice League run by Red Tornado, who has seen a devastating future for the DC universe, and or at least this is what he says, and is trying to hold it off by sending the team on various tasks that seem like they're actually villain tasks and not hero tasks at all, which they're very unclear on and very unsure about. What you guys think about this second issue?
Well, first off, cool cover. Yeah, I mean, you know, this kind of comes down to this question of, do you trust Red Tornado or not? You know what I mean? Like, how much do you love AI and willing to kind of trust it? Because it seems like Red Tornado is sending Cyborg and others on some kind of like errands for him. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure how much I trust what is happening, but I'm very
intrigued. Run a couple of errands for a friend.
Sure. Fine. But I mean, you know, Red Tornado is just kind of this floating AI at this point. It's, you know, maybe it's a little abuse of power. I'm not sure.
What dangers of AI have made themselves clear in society?
Well, I just feel like, you know, Red Twitter is like, hey, I don't have arms. Can you go and do this for me, Cyborg? Hey, Green Lantern, Power Girl,
can you pick up some Seamless for me? Yeah, I do pick up instead of delivery.
And
just physically pick it up because I don't have arms. Yeah. So it'd be great if you could, like, put it in my mouth.
Justin, what do you think about this book?
I like this book. I like that it's an unreliable leader here. We've seen this pitch a lot, this book a lot, of like the, like, well, we have to, I've analyzed the situation and we have to act. We have to solve this pre-crime. The fate of the universe is in our hands. And they're like, they come back and they're like, hey, man, what the fuck was that? That wasn't that. And he's like, no, trust me. And they're like, I don't trust you. Yeah. And I really like that little turn they put on it. So that's really working. And then the reveal on the last page of this issue, I was like, this feels like an even worse trick that's being pulled.
Yeah, it seems like he's playing with people's parents, you know, poor Power Girl's family.
Yeah, there's
some
real villain stuff going on here, which is definitely playing on our emotions that we're talking about. This feels like the sort of story that we won't really know until it's over with how good it was or not, because a lot of it is the outcome of, is Red Tornado correct and being on the board about there is an enormous disaster, I have to stop it, or is he secretly like Dead Tornado or whoever the evil version of Red Tornado I imagine exists somewhere in the DC universe, and now somebody is yelling at me because I don't know this obscure android villain character is really behind it. And we'll know eventually, but I guess we'll see what happens. No Man's Land, number one from Image Comics by Simon Kudransky. This is about a almost ready to retire FBI agent. FBI? CIA? Which is he?
FBI, I think.
FBI, who gets pulled into one last mission on the icy land bridge that is formed between Russia and the United States once every year for a couple of weeks. And there, of course, has been a murder there right smack dab in the middle. So we don't get to meet them this issue, but there is a Russian agent that's going to be sent to this bridge. He is the American agent, and they have a limited amount of time to solve this mystery. I thought it was interesting how much of this issue spent on, man, this FBI agent, he just has a bad life.
Yeah, well, just a crushing middle of the story.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to start for sure as far as the first issue is concerned. It's like, hey, you want to see a horrible divorce going on? And it's like, oh, man, I don't know. But we're starting with a creepy, snowy eyeball cover right here. So it's setting an ominous tone. And then it kind of starts with like, hey, you think your life sucks? Like, you know, look at what this guy's going through. But all that being said, it has a weird kind of interesting ending. And I do love the art style. I think there's some really interesting ideas happening here. I'm not sure yet, but I am intrigued enough to check out the next issue, that's for sure.
I feel like Simon Kudransky does this a lot in his books where it feels so, like, purposefully, like, you know, didactic and, like, putting out all this, like, you know, here's what we had to do in America and, like, these big ideas. And I'm always like, oh, this is so much of that. But then by the time I get to the story, I'm like, oh, you just really set the table for a story I can really now enjoy. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's rare to pull that trick multiple times and have it work, but I do think it does here. And the where we're left at the end of this first issue feels like the first act of a pilot. Again, this reminded me of True Detective Nightmare Country, honestly.
Yeah.
No, you're like, right. Really this, directly.
Yeah, but those last couple of pages are really beautiful. Like, there's just a bunch of whitewash throughout, just specks in the snow. So I'm forgetting what his company is called. I think it's like One Man Art or something like that.
I believe that's exactly One Man Art Comics.
And it really is. It's just, even if I don't love the things that he is doing, I'm still intrigued by them and respect them. And I was okay with most of this book, like you're saying, but it really hooks you by the end. So curious to check out issue number 2. And now it's time for Cowboys of Moo Basin number 1 from Odie Press, written by Matt Hodson, art by Juan Gedeon. This is based on the cult classic animated series, and it is also part of the Nacelleverse, which includes Biker Mice from Mars, the Great Galoo, and other characters. But this is back in time. This is way back in time when a bunch of animals have been transformed into cowboys and Old West type characters and going on adventures.
And I'm plus, curious where the nostalgia bath ends for people. Is it this book?
Well, this book was, first off, a fun cover, really kind of sets an interesting tone and expectations nicely. And
the expectations of Moo Mesa.
Right. Yes. Of like, okay,
it sets expectations of there's a cow, sheriff cow with guns.
Yeah, that I'm like, wow,
a
I don't
true
know.
Cowboy.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but I can tell by this a little bit of what I'm going to get, which I appreciate. And I like how the guns have these, like, they shoot golden kind of like sheriff badges, old school stars, sheriff badges. Yeah, the gold stars. And then the armadillos have these rock guns. It's just fun Looney Tunes style kind of art.
That is very
to it.
Fun. I'm just going to throw it out there. I don't know if this is true. I am going to make a bet that that's what those action figures did. And now, Pete, keep talking. I'm going to check.
Mm. Okay, great. So, yeah, I think interesting action. Character design is very specific to a time period, which is fun. So I was like, oh, this is a great start. I wasn't familiar with any of these things as a kid, but I thought, well, it's an interesting enough world. I'll check out more.
On board, nostalgia bath continues. I was like, okay, these cowboys, they make a lot of like cow and animal puns. I was like, that's fun. When we got the Amoradillos, and they were speaking French-accented English as they shoot rocks because they look like rocks, I was like, wait, what is this? This is so
you
crazy.
You like the Amoradillos? I thought that was a fun play on words.
I thought it was, but I was like, why? Is it, why French? It was just such a weird pun choice. I thought it was going to be like armored dillos.
Right.
Which I thought would make, they could be knights, maybe.
But
they have
more
new action figures, by the way, that shoot out stars, but I can't quite, I don't want to waste everybody's time. You can look it up on your own. As an aficionado of puns, I appreciated this book. I have a zero nostalgia bath for this, but the sheer density and variety of cow puns that happened throughout this issue, I just left very impressed, and I have to tip my hat here to Matt Hodson on doing a good job.
There you go. Tip your got Alex.
Cowboy cap. Yeah.
Got me. I was not expecting to got because I don't care about this at all, but I had a good time.
You got.
There you go.
Amazing Spider-Man number 12 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Ed McGuinness. We are following the Earthbound adventures of sort of Spider-Man, because actual Spider-Man is in space. But meanwhile, Norman Osborn is dressed in the Spider-Man suit, while Ben Reilly is pretending to be Peter Parker and working at his science lab with Peter Parker's childhood best friend. And in this issue, per the cover, which you had to love, Pete, all the other Spider-Mans confront the new Spider-Man and like, hey, man, you can't just wear this costume. And a big fight breaks out. I love this run. This is so good. I'm having such a good time. And the reveal towards the end of the issue, as they're fighting the different Spider-Man characters, very fun fight, very intense with Norman Osborn. But, and we should have had spoiler warning at the top, so I won't say it again, but I didn't pick up on that Gwen Stacy wasn't there, that Spider-Gwen wasn't there. And when Spider-Gwen gets attacked by Norman and he's like, oh my God, oh it's my Gwen God, again. Yeah. That got me. Like, it 100% yeah. was a moment where I was like, oh, you got me. I wasn't expecting that. That hit exactly the emotional way you want to do it. Joel Kelly is just like crushing this title. I'm having such a good time with this book right now.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. And I feel like Gwen again is a better name than Spider-Gwen. You know what I mean? Because that would Gwen be again. Fun. Yeah, Gwen again. Hey, it's yeah. Gwen again.
Sort of reveals the identity a little too.
So does yeah. Spider-Gwen, let's word. Be honest.
Yeah, but in the first word.
I love Joel Kelly as a writer, amazing writer. I think this cover is a lot of fun. Just Spider-Man has done too much to me, and it's hard to keep playing along at this point. I mean,
done too much?
Yeah, we saw Otto Octavius as Spider-Man, Superior Spider-Man, and now I got to sit here and watch Norman be Spider-Man. I'm just like, I can't. You guys have done this too much to me. The Osborn Gwen moment was nice, but I just feel like I've been tormented.
What about all the Spider family members? You don't like those guys either?
I mean, they're okay. It was just kind of weird. It was like, hey, you can't dress up and be a crime fighter like we are. How dare you? What? Okay.
Well, they all have a reason to be there. Miles Morales says,
Spider-Man's their leader. They're like the first one. So I feel like, hey, man, you can't go out and... He's also sort of killing people. He's almost killing people.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think they're justified.
It's just funny that like a bunch of dressed up heroes are like, hey, you can't just put this on, bro, and just pretend to be anybody, all right? There's a pecking order here. And it's
register. You got to register with the Spider-Mans.
It was funny how Spider-Boy was audition. Just doing that spider punch bit. That was a fun bit.
Yeah. Justin, what do you think about this?
I love it. I was going to agree with you. Like, I think it's such a strange run, like the stories, I haven't seen any of them coming, but Joe Kelly's been able to find the emotional core to all these different sort of strange ideas, surprising ideas, and is really making them all work.
Crypto, the Last Dog of Krypton, number 4 from DC Comics, written by Ryan North, art by Mike Norton. Another, like that earlier story we were talking about, just a laughs a million with Crypto.
How dare you, sir.
Just a great time as he makes another dog friend and they go on adventures together. Pete?
Ryan North is really playing with our fucking emotions here, man, all right? This is just, first off, fun cover, but Crypto looks wasted on this cover. I mean, Jesus, guy.
I'm drunk.
This hits you in the feels, and I feel like I shouldn't be crying this much on this fucking comic. I mean, holy shit, man.
Pete's really going through
it. There's a note in the beginning, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it literally says, like, this is a sad one. Find somebody to hug.
I have it here, yeah. This is a sad one. Read it with someone to hug nearby. And I got to say, like, I see why they did that, sort of like a trigger warning. But that really gave it away to me.
Yeah.
Like, it hurt the reveal in a way that I was like, oh, man, I don't need that. I don't want that. I wanted to enjoy my story. So I don't know if there's a way to have hard to do in a physical comic, but there should be like a... If you want to read a trigger warning, here it is. If you don't, you don't have to read it.
So wait, they need this would hit me way harder. Trigger warnings with like a pre-trigger trigger.
The story was built in such a way to be.
You're like, oh, that trigger warning just triggered me, and now I'm fucked up for the story, so I can't read it. I need a pre-trigger trigger that's like, hey, listen, there's a trigger that may or may not give some spoilers away. So like, heads up on
I'm
this.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying the opposite. I don't need a trigger.
I think that's
warning.
A great idea, though. I think having a trigger warning for trigger warnings would really help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trigger warning. This contains trigger warnings.
Thank you.
Where would you put it? Would you put it on the cover, or would you just put
it on the cover? Yeah.
Or would you put it at like the front of the comic book shop?
Oh, that's good.
Oh, that's
fun. We should put it on the inside of people's eyelids.
It's like a Walmart greeter situation where you put someone in the comic book shop and they say, "Hey, listen, here's some tissues if you're thinking about getting Last Dog of Krypton."
Oh, sorry. What? What were you going to say?
What?
You're thinking about what, now,
why do I need
like
tissues
I
walking
you
into this comic
rub
book
one
shop?
Out in comic shops you go well,
why are they giving me tissues at the door, Pete? That's
because
my
question.
Because
you're going to cry. It's a fucking emotional story.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's what I meant. I was just joking.
Man, Alex alive. Is joking about a lot of stuff lately.
If you see Alex in the comic book shop, run, dude. He's fucking not there.
Well, he goes to a section people aren't in a lot, like the models.
Does he?
The plastic models.
He's a twisted
dude.
I'm
always... Well, maybe that's what he...
Well, I got to say, I've really been enjoying the shelves recently because I love blind bagging it. You know what I mean?
What the fuck is
I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you mean by that.
Does that mean someone...
Is that like autoerotic asphyxiation?
G.I. Joe!
Blind bagging means you ask... Somebody who's not going
to hold
look.
On. We have to give this comment. We have to give crypto.
We got to move on. Oh, do we need to talk about crypto still?
We haven't talked about crypto. We don't need to talk about
this
our
book
previous
is
topic.
Very good. It is very sad, very but good. The art, like I've said, every issue so far by Mike Dorton is so good. It is shockingly sad throughout. It is not a celebration necessarily, but it's been really wonderful seeing crypto slowly develop these powers, and it seems like there's an indication that
it's
there's a sunnier end coming next issue, but I guess we will see. Next
Yes, I love this. It's great. Yeah.
G.I. Joe number 11 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Andrea Milana. Baroness and Cover Girl are fighting against Baron Blood. Did I get that all right?
Yes, look at you. You're killing it.
Wow, this is great. Also, I feel like we missed an issue. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But
I think we did, yes.
Yeah, but we picked up here and I was like, last I remember, Baroness was stabbing Cover Girl in the back and we just skipped ahead. But clearly we missed an issue. They're fighting back against Baron Blood, and meanwhile Risk and some other guy, Clutch maybe, are with a Transformer and they
Hound.
Go on a little adventure.
Hound sure. is the Transformer.
Great, and they go on a little adventure of their own.
Yeah.
Cool. Sounds like you're making up words, but
he's mad because the Energon doesn't taste good.
Oh, man, that Energon's been messed with. And, you know, if you're someone who loves Energon, you're going to know someone's cutting your shit. You know what I mean? Cutting it up. Cobra Commander's not giving you that.
Every time they mention that, and like we're talking about on this issue, the Transformers like, whew, this is not good tasting Energon. I'm like, that's what this universe is based on? Really?
Yeah.
Eating
it's
Energon?
It's a gourmet. It really is. And
they eat Energon. That's like...
I don't know, but it's like if there was a pizza universe with humans who are like, we got to get pizza. Oh, my God, we got to find... Where's pizza?
That's my reality every day,
that's
man.
That's pizza universe.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, what do we think about this so G.I. Joe comic?
This is great. did you want to...
I was just going to say, like, do you ever take a nostalgia bath and you get too many different toys in there? And you actually sit down on, which one am I sitting on? It went right up and pushed my butt. I got this.
Pushed your butt?
I got this extra action
figure
hitting my
butt. Are you
putting
action figures up your ass in the bath, bro?
Not up my ass, but, like, there's too many in the tub. There's too many in the tub.
That's not.
In the nostalgia bath.
No, man. Get in the
tub
first.
Do you ever
first.
Have too many?
No.
Too many action figures in the tub?
Okay, let's just run down the line. When's the last time you took a bath playing with your action figures? For me, last night. What about you guys?
Yeah, same. Same.
You got to really dry them out afterwards or they can get moldy fast.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I'm having a blast with this. Great to see Baroness.
A nostalgia blast.
Yeah, and Major Blood. That knife fight was messed up, and the fact that poor Major Blood, which you shouldn't say poor Major Blood, but his only eye that's left gets stabbed and is now blind.
Yeah, now he's got no eyes.
Brutal.
Here's the thing. When you put an eye patch, that's like putting a target on your one good eye.
I guess.
Basically.
Yeah. But, yeah, anyways... Yeah, I just feel like there's other places to stab somebody. But, man.
Yeah, totally. Be polite in the middle of a knife fight. And leave
that's what
out.
I always say. You know, you still
really
got to
like
be polite in the middle of a knife fight.
I really like the relationship between Baroness and Cover Girl. I think the way that played out was very fun in this issue. It feels very, not to keep calling this out, but like it feels very TV. Like it definitely is playing out like a TV episode, so that's enjoyable.
And maybe
I don't know
romantic.
About all the Transformers stuff, but.
Slight romance.
Maybe. Well, like Cover Girl's like, hey, I'd like to sit down and look at this amazing view with you. It's like, oh, you and the Baroness? That's adorable. Also, I love the Cobra Commander and Destro talk. And, you know, where they're talking about their working relationship, I think that's very healthy.
I did appreciate the fact that they established that they know that they both have shiny masks, because that always bothered me. So then getting it out of the open, and I breathed a sigh of relief.
And you're like, oh, finally, they're talking about it.
Mm-hmm. I know that's been stressing you. You've been talking about that in therapy a lot.
Yeah.
I just a heat check on these reveals, because every issue of G.I. Joe ends with a reveal of the upcoming Joes. Pete, give me a heat check on these people that I don't know who they are. We got Night Force.
Yep.
Tank Tread.
Sorry. What was the...
And Shooter.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You're killing these names. It's really great.
Those are real.
Yeah.
The back of the page.
He asked you for a heat check, though. Was your heat check
not confirmation?
I've never heard of any of those people.
What?
You've never heard of any of those?
Yeah.
Well, Night Force is like three dudes, and they are like, we'll watch you. Shooter is codename Shooter.
The ski mask dude I know. He's been in stuff before.
You know him. Mm. Shooter's the file they're looking at, and Tank Tread I did just make up. And,
yeah, I was going to say Tank Tread.
You knew Tank Tread was...
Yeah.
Yeah, you said yes.
Yeah, I did, because I was like, yes. I'm going along with your bit. Yeah.
It's not a bit. This is real.
Yeah.
I'm going to get you.
You didn't.
I'm going to get you. You know, you won't find Tank Tread up your butt, on your back, because he's not real.
That's true. That's a good point.
Okay.
I have horrible images of how you take baths.
There's too many figures in there.
Why don't we move on to Predator Kills the Marvel Universe number 2 for Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Marcella Ferreira and Daniel Picciotto. Kraven is leading basically an entire Yatuja armada to kill all of the Marvel superheroes. Not even really to hunt them, but like invade Earth in this issue. And they're starting off with some of the heavy hitters. Specifically, they take out Magneto and then a couple of other people that I'm blanking on.
Yo, Cyclops gets wrecked.
Oh, Cyclops gets wrecked, They're going for the X-Men first in this issue after taking out the Fantastic Four last issue. What'd you guys think about this?
Well, this is kind of hitting me a little weird, because it's also at the same time we're getting the Marvel zombies. So it's kind of like zombies versus all of Marvel and Predator versus all of Marvel here. I do like this idea that Kraven's kind of leading this Predator team. And I think it's an interesting idea, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen here. But it's just rough to see all your friends die horribly. You know what I mean?
Yes. The thing that gets me about this is, like, the Kraven of it. I'm like, why?
But that's picking up on the last Predator kind of series where, you know, Kraven was like, yo, I'm just been finally recognized for my talents by these alien killing monsters. And I finally have people to lead who are all with me and with my goals. And we're all aligned, and I'll show them the way.
It's just weird where it's like, you guys hunt, I hunt. Oh, let's kill everyone.
Let's hunt together.
Yeah.
It just feels strange.
I like the first issue because of how hard it went, and it was taking a lot of chances in terms of killing off characters. And I guess they do that in this issue. But the whole idea that they're like I was saying, that it's an invading force, it's not a hunt. Like, they're not hunting them. They're just going in and murdering everybody. And I feel like there's an essential difference in terms of what the Predators are doing in every other iteration of the franchise, including the previous miniseries, which doesn't quite pad out here, even though we get some fun scenes, like them using the Milano to sneak by S.H.I.E.L.D. I thought was fun. Cool. The way they kill Magneto is gross and fun. And also just the whole thing where, like, they're fighting Sentinels in the danger room and Cyclops is like, who's this guy? What did you change with the program? And
then that the Predator wrecks him. That's a
way too comfortable. Fun as well. Yeah. So, like, I'm having fun with this, but there's something about, like, the way they're executing on the overall premise that isn't quite working for me right now.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you want them to hunt where they, like, smell each other and like, oh, let's smell Magneto and let's,
I like, guess it's just like out the in the open too much. It's just like classic alien invasion comic versus Predator comic. That's all. But anyway, Rick and Morty versus the Universe, Beth Till Death, number 1 from Odie Press, written by Daniel Kimblesmith and Jake Black, art by Susie Blake. There's another one shot in the overall Rick versus the Rick Morty versus the Universe event. And here we've got Space Beth and a regular Beth trying to pull off a heist to get a little piece of a universe so Rick can solve the overall problem that they're having in the main series. And we get something which, if you're a fan of the show, I was really surprised they put in a comic book, which is we meet Space Jerry, a version of Jerry who's been cloned, who lives in space, who is basically the equivalent of Space Beth. I don't know. I really am enjoying this event quite a bit. I think there's some fun big swings that they're taking here, and that's good. I know I said big swings like a million times this episode.
Glorious.
I think this is right in line with the kind of cartoons humor. It feels like it's in comic book form, which is fun. The whole Stan Lee Rick bit is hilarious. And the use of the comics code box was hilarious to hide Jerry's junk. So that was fun.
Yeah, I use that in my regular life as well. The
you have a giant comic code that you just put over your cock and balls?
Yeah, especially when I'm like, hey, babe, I got an action figure stuck in my ass. Again, I hold up the thing.
Man, your bath has got to be crazy, dude. I can't believe kids running around, you know?
Well, plus if it's like the middle of a party, I want to like be tasteful and not just walk out completely naked. So I have the comics code covering my junk.
Sounds like you throw great parties.
Yeah. Well, you got to get clean for the party. But
real quick, like related behind. Topic. Do you ever swallow an action figure and time it?
Yeah, but honestly, the clock's still ticking.
Wow.
Oh, they're like chewing gum. I didn't realize that.
Well, you never know. Your body's big, and there's a journey. And, you know, a lot of these guys have to fight their way out, and maybe they're not ready.
That's that new Margot Robbie movie, right? You never give up, you stay. Your body's big, and there's a journey.
Yes, I think that's what it is. I think that's what the story is.
Yeah.
That's why, well, and the spoiler alert, there's a reason why I have that action figure in my butt, because it's the final boss for the other action figure that I swallowed.
Snow job in your butt? What do you got in there?
Yeah, I got snow job in my butt, and I got Optimus Prime going through my my insides. He's in the small intestine.
Trucker robot.
Yeah, he
keeps
truck?
Transforming. Oh, he keeps why? Transforming.
That's so cool.
It's horrible.
So when
it's
you're horrible. You're like,
ah! I scream. Oh, right. I'm like, when's this guy going to run out of Energon? He's got so much Energon. I keep eating Energon. And he's like, this stuff tastes bad.
You got
I'm
the
like,
touch.
Anyway, good book.
This book. I like the connective. The fact that they're number one feels like obviously a marketing idea, but the story, it's actually hard, I think, to make this a connected story and also feel like a standalone. And I think Dan Cablesmith does a great job of doing that. It's fun. It's funny. I don't really even watch Rick and Morty that much. I'm more of a casual viewer of that. And so the fact that I like this is a testament to it.
Right. Invincible Universe Battle Beast, number 5 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Ryan Ottley. In this issue, Battle Beast and his crew that hates him have arrived at the planet of the prince who got smooshed and eaten, which we get a flashback for how exactly that happened, how he was swallowed, how he's still alive, and get to meet the sister of the giant monster that ate him, who has taken over the planet, leading up to, you're not going to believe this, a battle with Battle Beast.
Oh, man. Yeah, first off, cool cover, bro. I feel like this is a blast. The only problem with this issue is it's kind of like a setup to this fight that starts at the end of this issue, but it's mainly just like a flashback kind of ish. But I love this team. I feel like this is a fun character. And so I'm still having a blast with this, even though it's a little bit more of a setup-ish. I'm still loving the art, love the action. Can't wait for the next issue.
I was surprised by how much of the backstory we got on the smooshed prince, but it was interesting. I really like the art in this book. It's very busy, but it's very like languid, and I feel like it really is evocative of like the different planets that the Battle Beast keeps going to. I still Battle Beast has a character who's just like, I want to die now. Is not the most fun vibe for the quote unquote hero of the story, but. I guess that's who he is.
It's impressive he's still alive and kicking, you know what I mean?
I do want to call out one plot point of this story that really struck me, which is we are, again, getting the Smooshed Princes, who actually has a name. I think it's like Prince Takara or Tanaka or something like that. Anyway, he is slowly growing his body back in this robot body that's been carrying him. And he eventually, halfway or so through the book, pulls himself out and is like, okay, I have tiny legs, but I can kind of walk around now. And the ship, who really hates Battle Beast, takes over the robot body, is like, well, I'm going to take over this body now and walk. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So we're going to get a new dynamic with him. Yeah. And like one page later, the villain smooshes the prince again.
Yeah.
And that is exactly the sort of thing that you could only get in a Robert Kirkman book, because he is the only writer who would be like, oh, I'm going to set up this new dynamic for the team. Psych! And he constantly does that. And it's like playing for the comedy. It works. It got me. I assume he's going to keep doing that over and over and over again with this character, and it's going to keep getting me every single time.
Yeah, I agree. It is fun. His name's Prince Salaka, and Salaka. I thought maybe they'll have to share the body next issue. Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll see. Fantastic Four number 3 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Umberto Ramos. This title is tying into Umberto. One World Under Doom, as the Fantastic Four tries to deal with something they discovered about Doom in previous issues, that it has a machine that is creating save points for him, where he can travel back in time and redo things so he can solve his mistakes. That's exactly what they deal directly with here. What you two guys think about this issue?
What you guys?
That's more efficient.
Yeah.
What you guys?
First off, I'm a sucker for Ramos's art, so just so great to see that. This is a fun issue, but also it's a little frustrating for me with.
You're in a similar situation?
Yeah, just felt like Mr. Fantastic got a little sappy at the end there with his hope of doom. But other than that, I was having a good time.
Interesting. Sappy. Ryan North's stories, especially for the Fantastic Four, are he adds in so many like little just complications throughout that make for a nice, like, really feel the full story as you're reading it. Like, there's lots of, especially given what I'm trying to say is Doom is such like the big deal in the Marvel Universe right now, and they just take him down. He's like, gotta go. But they take him down so effectively, I feel like he's about to take so many L's from here on out.
Fantastic Four is so good as a title on an issue-by-issue basis. It makes One World Under Doom being a mixed bag that much more frustrating. And that was one of my big takeaways. It's not necessarily helpful as a takeaway, but like, this is a great Fantastic Four Doom confrontation that feels like you're reading a really high level chess match versus One World Under Doom, which feels like you're maybe watching checkers where half the board is hidden.
That's interesting. I mean, honestly, when I was reading this, I was like, oh, this is the end of One World Under Doom right here. And then he's like, no, I'm going to go fight over there in the main title.
Yeah.
I wish it was here, because this was such an effective, like, classic Reed Richards way of beating Doom by just outsmarting him yet again.
Yeah. Don't worry. We still have another 2 months of this to go. Godzilla Escape the Dead Zone, number 2 from IDW, written by Griffin Sheridan and Ethan Parker. Once again, art by Pablo de Tunica. We also talked to Ethan about this book. This is part of the new Kaisei era of Godzilla. And here we are following, per the name, a bunch of folks at a place called the Dead Zone that has been destroyed by this Kaisei energy. We meet two kids in this issue who could control kaiju, and a man who is a man-sized kaiju as well, sort of like a Hulk-type character meets a classic Wanderer-type character. Pete, this has to be right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, this was fun. First off, cool cover. You're kind of rolling with the mini Godzilla dude, which is fun, and then you get the brother-sister duo with Glass Eater. And
husband wife. We honestly don't know.
Yeah. Well, this says brother.
I think it's
sister.
Pretty clear, brother.
Honestly,
sister.
Could be both. Could be both.
Well, I doubt that. But I do love this kind of fun choice they make where it's like, hey, do you have time to talk about the one true God? And they're talking about Godzilla. I mean, well, just you see what they and then you thought, oh, well, that's fun. But yeah,
I do. I take going off your point. I really like the religious aspect of this. Like, of course, people would worship Godzilla.
Yeah,
if he came up from below,
I worship Godzilla,
the god below.
You know what
that's
I mean?
And that's what I'm saying, even, Pete. You would be in this cult.
Yeah, I would be in this cult. It would be very.
I don't know
dangerous.
If you'd be leading it. I don't want to say you'd be leading.
No,
it.
I don't think I would.
But you would be like a middle manager of the cult.
Oh, that's nice of you to say. But I do think this is weird in all the right ways and amazing art. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's it. I enjoy this as well. I like the art. I like the way the art is. Feels like it has been. It's a little like dirty. Everything's a little like mussed up.
It's
and
got
I think that
grit
really matches
to
with
it,
the book.
Which is
there's
nice.
Grit there. Yes.
Yeah. It's very cartoony as well, which I'm surprised about, but it plays off the fun tone and wild imagination in this book. Last but not least,
it reminds me of one last thing on that. It reminds me of if this book were in like 90s Valiant. This feels like a 90s Valiant book if they had the Godzilla license back then.
The Seasons, number 8 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Paul Azaceta. In this issue, some big things are going down as the Season Sisters fight back against the evil Circus, who has possessed several of them, leading to classic Rick Remender-style twist towards the end of this issue. I do remember Rick. Justin, I think you love this one.
JT Sizzle.
I love this book. I feel like it... there's some great, we've talked about this before, but there's great metaphor with the mirrors here. I love the characters. I love the character design for all the villains. These sisters are great. The way we are, and the twist that Alex mentioned, we sort of go, pun intended, through the looking glass with one of the characters here in a way that I really liked. I did have a horrifying thought that I guess counts as a prediction.
Oh.
What if, our main character... is fighting, doing the thing. She's finally found her place in the family. She's been left out of the family a lot. She's fighting this whole time. She's basically living her best situation. Is there going to be a reveal later that she's actually been looking at this in a mirror this whole time?
Oh, don't do that to me.
Good call.
Don't do that to me. I don't want it. I don't want a reminder. Please don't.
Famous. Has he ever really made a character go through their paces in the course of any of his
not
other
usually. Not
every
usually.
Every single time? His philosophy aside, I think this is really interesting. I love the use of color in this. It's just so cool, and I really am impressed by this art. It's the real hero here. I also love the story. I also loved how Winter kind of saved herself. I thought that was such a badass thing as well.
Except maybe went evil.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Time will tell. And I also feel like the bad guy has kind of a Walton Goggins vibe a little bit when it's not full clown.
You see him everywhere.
Also, I'm wondering...
When are you going full clown?
Well, never. There's also this kind of underlying thing that clowns are bad, and I'm wondering if that's affecting your marriage at all, Zalvin.
Yeah, we got divorced.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so if
your
you
wife who is a clown.
Yeah. If you guys want to see a divorce, I know you were talking about that earlier, you can just see my marriage.
Alex, no offense, but that's I'm cool. Team Marnie, dude.
Thanks. No, that's cool. She'll be doing the podcast from this point on. And that is it.
Wait, she got the podcast?
She got the podcast. I'm finally free, guys.
Wait, Alex, before you end it.
I honestly can be honest with you guys now. I don't like comic books.
Well,
I guess we're getting a divorce then, too.
Oh, yeah. You wanted to show off that you bought Transformers number 24?
No, I wanted to talk about Transformers 24 because we didn't get to talk about it fully. We got an advance copy, and there were, like, a bunch of pages redacted. So I didn't, you know, we reviewed it, but I didn't get to kind of read the whole thing. And now that I've read the whole thing, I don't think my childhood will be the same ever again. That was really fucked up. Ended in a kind of a happy place. But what happened to Starscream is something that I haven't been able to cope with or deal with at all. And it's been sitting in the back of my brain, not going anywhere. And I got to deal with it eventually. But, man, that's some fucking scarring shit.
Yeah. I feel the same way about Optimus Prime, but I'm talking about the one in my body.
Great. Well, hopefully, if you start hearing some music coming from your butt, you know it's almost over. You know what I mean?
Can we pull that quote? Can we pull that quote? I'm going to use that quote a lot.
Wow. That was a really wonderful note for me to leave the podcast on. So thank you guys so much for.
Wait, I actually have a question for you, Alex. If you hate comics, what are you doing jerking off on all these comics?
Yeah, exactly.
What are you doing?
Teach them a lesson.
Yeah, why are you blind bagging so much if you hate comics?
Great point. Great point. I guess that is the reason I will not keep jerking off in comic book shops.
Wow, what a service we just did.
Yeah. Anyway, if you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books for real. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Off to my nostalgia bath with apologies to Snow Job.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.